This is Dr. Robert Abley shining a spotlight on freedom, which you can also hear on my website, spotlightonfreedom.com. Last week, we began to demonstrate the march toward totalitarianism by reviewing the federal government actions of putting American Army troops in positions to patrol the streets of the United States. Today, we continue our review of the most recent events in Washington from the past week or two, which pushes the U.S. toward totalitarianism. We begin this week with the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. This amendment says that warrants are required for a government to take action against its people in any way, and that such warrants must be based on probable cause. Additionally, the Supreme Court has for a long time recognized that privacy of citizens to their personal information is a right under the Fourth Amendment. For example, Justice Louis Brandeis was the first Supreme Court justice to maintain that our right to privacy extends beyond property and reputation. In 1928, Brandeis put it this way: "The right to be left alone, the most comprehensive of our rights, and the right most valued by civilized people. To protect that right, every unjustifiable intrusion by the government upon the privacy of the individual, whatever the means employed, must be deemed a violation of the Fourth Amendment." Today, the court recognizes, as do most legal scholars, that our constitutional right to privacy has three aspects: the right against government surveillance and intrusion, the right to have private information kept private by government, and the right to be free in thought and belief from government intrusion and regulation. Now let us turn to the news from this past week, in which we were informed of new FBI guidelines which expand warrantless spying to unheard-of and deeply unconstitutional levels. Signed by U.S. Attorney General Michael Mukasey on October 3rd, these new guidelines give the FBI carte blanche to spy on Americans without probable cause and without warrant. Further, the new regulations allow a person's race or ethnic background to be the cause for opening an investigation of that person. In conjunction with this comes the revelation last week that the National Security Agency has been not only listening to, but transcribing the overseas conversations of ordinary American citizens who had absolutely nothing to do with terrorism. They did this, of course, without warrant and without probable cause. This practice was known to the democratically controlled Congress and to the Senate Intelligence Committee, but the Dems in charge chose to do nothing about it. So this march toward totalitarianism cannot be laid strictly at the door of the Republicans or of Bush. When democratic leaders countenance such actions, they are as guilty for selling out democracy as is Bush. These are the ones who need to be voted out of office for the democratic revolution to begin. Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, Pat Roberts, head of the Intelligence Committee, and Jane Harman, ranking House Intelligence Committee member. Add to these issues the synthesis of corporate and government interests that resulted in the bailouts which angered so many people, and you have a government which has gotten out of control because their concerns are no longer the concerns of the people or their rights. The first Bush proposal to deal with the financial meltdown was pure totalitarianism, so they were forced to reword it. But the bill that passed, giving nearly $1 trillion of our tax money to the wealthiest corporations with minimal requirements made in return, was still totalitarian in design. If the word totalitarian sounds too harsh, we can use Noam Chomsky's term, state capitalism. Either way, the end result is the same. State capitalism is a direct threat to democracy, just as spying without warrant and without probable cause, and stationing our troops within our border, preparing to suppress the citizens. The reason state capitalism is a threat to democracy, as Chomsky himself states, is that under state capitalist rules, it is not the government's business to consider the cost to others if their practices lead to financial crisis, as they regularly do. It was the British economist John Maynard Keynes who was the first to recognize that it is the right of government to restrict capital movement. In fact, it was Keynes who argued that the solution to the Depression was to stimulate the economy through some combination of two approaches: a reduction in interest rates and a government investment in infrastructure, a novel idea for our time. But until we elect legislators who understand that controlling and restricting the flow of money is part of the government's responsibility to its citizens, the democratic revolution cannot begin. Most of all, we need to awaken our fellow citizens from their slumber, inform those around us, and rouse people to act. Because if we don't act now, we will lose it all. And if we lose it, we will never get it back. Robert Abley, SpotlightOnFreedom.com.